Second hour, Darren, Donnick, and Chase. Things are happening on this Tuesday. And one of them is Malcolm Turner has resigned over on West End as Vanderbilt Athletics Director. Candace Story Lee is the first female AD at Vanderbilt. To help us with all that is Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. Joe, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Well, it's been it hasn't been a dull show today, that's for sure. And we didn't see this coming. What was your initial reaction when you got the news about 30 minutes ago?
Yeah, February is supposed to be a slow month, right?
Yeah, not so much.
Well, my initial reaction, it was less shocked than it was when I started to hear things a couple days ago about things maybe falling apart. I still didn't anticipate then that this would happen so fast. But, you know, I guess that is, you know, sometimes when things start to come out about issues and second thoughts and things like that, sometimes it does go fast. So I was somewhat ready, been trying to get Malcolm on the phone and haven't been able to, before this. So somewhat prepared for some kind of an announcement. But, wow, I mean, Vanderbilt, not only does he resign, of course, they have Candace Story Lee, named as a replacement. So that's, I can't think of a situation quite like this that I can recall. It's overall, to me, it is stunning. And of course, Candace Story Lee, it was David Williams' kind of chosen successor as he was going out as Vanderbilt AD. And there was some support for her, and there was obviously some support for, you know, maybe go outside and find, you know, someone with some fresh ideas and a fresh perspective. And I spent, you know, quite a bit of time around Malcolm Turner in his year. I spent one whole football Saturday kind of walking around with him. And I still think that he had real potential to do the job extremely well. And I think he had high potential as a fundraiser, and you were seeing some of that. But obviously, there was a big disconnect somewhere, and it fell apart quickly.
Well, the disconnect, in my opinion, is the fact that, you know, I don't think he read the room correctly. I mean, I think he came in with ideas and realized that Vanderbilt wasn't going to change for him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough. As we've told people for a long time, it's tough over there, and everybody thinks they can change them. James Franklin was the one that moved more obstacles than anybody, and he still only lasted 3 years with success and still jumped to get out because of frustrations. I mean, Malcolm Turner has been on the job for a year, and my guess is he realized very, very quickly, whoa, this is going to be really hard. This is not easy. They're not just doing whatever I asked them to do.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think absolutely. I think that's certainly part of this. And, you know, of course, there are some off-the-record conversations I have with him, so, you know, I've got to be careful. You know, you can't divulge off-the-record conversations. But I will say that I think that his mindset was, I'm pushing this, and come along with me, and you know, it's going to happen. You know, I think he had a very aggressive mindset with in terms of and you know, look, he knew coming in what the reputation was and what some of the obstacles were and how things had gone. I mean, he knew that this was not a surprise to him. I think his mindset was very aggressive and was like, once we start showing progress and start raising funds, say, look, you know, we can do this. We can get the money to do the things we want to do. Then some minds will change. And so, yes, it does look like it's sort of like, well, no, the minds didn't change, and okay, see you later. Really quickly.
When do you think, and I'm asking you a question you cannot answer, I'm just asking you to give us your opinion. When do you think he woke up and said, I can't do this anymore, like I got to bounce?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I hope to find out more about that. I have no idea. I know that it wasn't, what was it, 2 weeks ago, Vanderbilt announced a $5 million gift to basketball from a donor. And I thought, I mean, that's a big gift. You know, you can do something with $5 million. And I thought that was it. There you go. I said, there's one of those signs, because I knew that they were planning to announce some of their gifts to kind of, show publicly that they're doing what all other Power Five college athletic departments do and have to do. It is the lifeblood. Just as recruiting is the lifeblood of your sports teams in college, you don't do any of this if you do not have ample and aggressive fundraising. And so I thought that was a positive sign. Like, here you go. You're seeing some of the effect of Malcolm Turner pay off. So at that point, I would have said things are going quite well. And that was a couple weeks ago. That doesn't mean that, for him, the red flags may have popped up 2 months ago, and this is just finally happening. I don't know. But I know that in recent days, there were some concerns about him, and in particular, the fact that he was not at the Vanderbilt baseball banquet, which, is a massive event every year for Tim Corbin and really for athletics at Vanderbilt.
He wasn't there?
Wait a minute, right. So it was sort of a, what is going on here with this guy? And that's sort of some people's the genesis of the red flag the other way. Like, what's happening with Malcolm Turner? And boom, here we are.
Joe Rexroth of The Athletic here with us. So obviously this is all breaking, trying to figure everything out. Candace Lee has ties to Vanderbilt, went there, played there. Has been around for a long time. It's my understanding that David Williams was very close to her and kind of had pegged her to be the next one. But now she gets that opportunity. Is staying in-house, in your opinion, Joe, the right move for Vanderbilt, knowing everything they have to do?
Well, I it's hard to answer that, Chase. Like, I don't – I mean, look, I think – with the late David Williams, I think it was an interesting sort of arrangement because, he was a law professor. He was, he was heavily involved in other parts of the university. And that's, you can look around again at any other Power Five athletic department and you won't find anything like that, where someone who is an AD is also like has a really important role in the university. And that immediately is going to mean you can't do all the same things that an AD does. And in today's college athletics, that an AD has to do. An AD has to be a fundraiser. There are probably some places where an AD just sort of delegates and has a great fundraising staff and all that. But I think it's really hard in today's world of college athletics with the money that flies around and with the intense competition for dollars and for resources and for facilities and all that, for an AD not to be heavily involved in that. And David Williams was not. And, that was sort of, I think that was partially, it just wasn't him. He didn't like doing it wasn't his cup of tea, but also he had this huge other responsibility other than being AD. So, that's a long way of saying I just don't know. I mean, if that's not the same situation, as far as I understand it, with Candace Story Lee, it wasn't the same situation with Malcolm Turner. And that's a positive step, just that Vanderbilt kind of recognizes, okay, this job is its own job. And I don't have any idea of, how she will proceed here. I mean, is this a situation where there are some concrete plans in place, I know that there's a big fundraising campaign coming up, I believe in the spring, which athletics needs to be a part of. But how much of what Malcolm Turner started to set into motion can she just pick up and go with, or does she not want to? Does she not agree with some of it, want to change it, start over? These are all questions I can't answer right now. But I do think there's got to be some advantage to having someone who knows the people, and as you said, Darren, knows the room. And, if you were trying to bring in some outside, even interim right now, how much progress could you really make? At least she knows the place well, she knows the people well, so maybe this can be somewhat seamless.
Joe, we'll have to leave on this because we have David Poyle in the on-deck circle. I said that I don't believe Jerry Stackhouse is long for this job. I don't sense it. My guess is he'll go back to the NBA, especially with today's news. What's your feeling on Jerry Stackhouse's future in this market as Vanderbilt's basketball coach?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to disagree. I mean, he has taken ownership of this program. You know, he's been recruiting guys. He has a class coming in. He has these players. So it's not like it would be out of left field for him to stay. But I would say you'd have to think that there'd be a greater chance now that he might also be quick in Nashville and out. I mean, it's impossible not to think that way. And it's going to be interesting to see how he views this and whether he wants to stick it out, or if you know, his friendship and collaboration with Turner was one of the things, you know, I think it is one of the things that got him here, obviously. And so how much does that being gone now change his mind on his future here?
Joe, thanks for doing this on short notice. Really appreciate it.
Okay, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
We'll be looking for his work at The Athletic. That's Joe Rexroad. We'll come back. David Poyle, Predators general manager, next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, a very active Tuesday here on the show. And every Tuesday at this time, we talk to Predators general manager David Poyle. He's on the line with us. And, of course, he's brought to you by Gary Force Acura and Cool Springs Wines and Spirits. Tonight, the Predators embark on a four-game road trip. That's all going to be in Western Canada. Tonight against Winnipeg, Thursday night against Calgary, Saturday night versus Edmonton, and then they'll wrap things up Monday night in beautiful Vancouver. David, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm up in Winnipeg. Just watched the Jets morning skate, and our guys are going to go on in about 15 minutes. So here, a lot of snow. So thank you.
Uh-oh, David, are you there? He kind of went away.
Hello?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Sorry, you went away.
Okay, sorry.
Must be the cold weather. How cold is it?
Well, it's minus something. That's all I know. Lots of, like I said, lots of snow. It's actually the sun is out, but this is not Nashville. So, like I say, it feels like hockey weather here for sure.
Yeah, once it has a negative, it doesn't really matter what the number is following. You know, it's really cold. Let me ask you something quickly on the Winnipeg side of things, just because you understand the dynamics as a longtime general manager of how all this stuff works. Story got out there yesterday that Dustin Byfuglien, looks like Dustin Byfuglien and the Jets are pretty close to parting ways. He hasn't played all season. There's been a, you know, it's been a constant storyline of whether he was going to play, and, you know, he had the surgery in October. You've probably dealt with those type of dynamics. What is that like, and now it looks like it's coming to a close? What are your thoughts on that whole story that came out pretty much yesterday?
Well, it's very complicated. I don't know whether it's coming to an end or not. All I know is what I've read. I'm going to talk to their general manager tonight when I see him at the game. But it's not a good situation for the team side, which I guess I care about the most in this case. You have a player that is a 2-year contract with a lot of money, like $7.6 million. The team has suspended him, and then the player, through the PA, has filed a grievance. So you have a lot of money at stake, for sure. And then the other thing from a competitive standpoint is you don't have the player, and his money, meaning his cap, is on their payroll, which is a real negative in terms of them having any flexibility, if you say, to make a trade or to take on more contracts. If they did come to a settlement, I believe what would happen would be the player would be free agent, and of course the $7.6 million would come off their cap, which would be a tremendous amount of money, and give Winnipeg, if they could make a deal or what have you, to really strengthen their team in this next 2 weeks before the trading deadline. So there's a lot at stake here, and it would be really interesting to see how it plays out.
Yep, and it looks like if you read the story, it says he would indeed become a UFA. He would be an unrestricted free agent and free to go wherever he wants. You've had to also play this game if, let's just say, he was out there and available for anybody to have, and you start the conversations just like anybody else. This is not just a simple conversation, right? There's a lot of layers you have to figure out of, can he play? You know, is what's his health issue? Does he want to be, you know, does he want to play? What's his mindset? Is he going to retire at the end of the year? I mean, this is complicated, as you know, and so there'll be a little bit different vetting process than maybe a normal situation. True?
Yeah, absolutely. All those, I think, three or four things you just said clearly went through my mind if he became a free agent and if, you know, any team or, you know, was interested in acquiring his services. I mean, I don't even know whether he's been skating. Part of the grievance, I believe, is something to do with his health, going back to an ankle injury. And I mean, there's so many things. This would be a real leap of faith to go forward with this player at this time. And I mean, who's ever come in that with, you know, 10 games to go or 15 games to go in a season that hasn't skated all year long? It's been able to have any kind of impact on a team or be able to make a contributing role. So, like I say, he's still Winnipeg's property. There's the grievance. There's money, big time money at stake in this situation. And again, the player is he's either 34 or 35 right now. So he's been a terrific player for in the NHL and for Winnipeg. But there's so many things that we don't know. This would be a real risky proposition going forward.
David Poile, Predators general manager, on the line with us. 51 games in the books. We've talked to you all year, David, and certainly there's been a lot of frustrations. But I have to believe that one frustration is, and you can sense it with the players and now new head coach John Hines, and knowing you because of the history of that building, this market, and all the success that's happened in Bridgestone Arena, one thing that's probably been really tough for you is just the lack of success at home this season. And yet again, it was on display the other night.
No, it's completely frustrating. And again, we've got to deal with that now and in the future, because regardless of what you want to say, the league has a lot of parity, but still the home team has an advantage. And the Predators used to have as much advantage or dominance as any team in the league. And, you know, you can talk about a lot of things this year that, you know, could be better or we're disappointed in. But I think that's right at the top of the list is our record at home. And I'm just being very open and honest with you. I don't think any of us really know why that is. I mean, you've heard before that, there's a routine that you can get to on the road, and I think that's absolutely true. Like today is we get in last night, the guys all go to dinner. I think everybody's back in the hotel by 8 or 9 o'clock at night, so you get a great night's sleep and you're ready to go. They all have breakfast together this morning. We're now at the rink, for an hour or so to get warmed up and what have you. Get back, have a meal, guys have a nap, and they're at the game. So it's a pretty simple, lifestyle and preparation for a road game. At home, obviously there's different situations, friends, family, kids. Maybe that's something we have to look into a little bit more in terms of the overall, daily routine of each player as they prepare for the home game. But again, I'm just drawing at straws right now, to be very honest with you, but because I think from a competitive standpoint, preparation standpoint, all the signs pointed to a really strong effort for a game the other night at home, but it didn't happen. So we got to find the key to that and get back to making Bridgestone Arena one of the hardest buildings to play in.
As you guys have been gearing up to play teams in Canada, they like to talk hockey, as you know, a lot, and so they've been calling me to come on in Toronto or Winnipeg and other markets up there in Western Canada to talk about this Predators team that they're about to see. And one question that I've not been able to get around is, you know, what the heck is going to happen at the deadline with, you know, where this team is? And certainly this is no strange question to you. I've talked to you about this on this weekly, but how much does, as we get a little bit closer to February 24th, how much does everything that happens, it's like Washington, New Jersey, do you get in a room and then things change, and then the Vegas game happens and you get in a room and things change again? I mean, how much is it hinging on a road trip or a game, every game that goes by leading up to, as you get a little bit closer, 3 weeks from the deadline?
That's the $1 million question. I mean, it is this inconsistency that we've had all all year. I you know, where I stand right now, of course, the next four games is huge. These are four teams that are all ahead of us, but not by much in the standing. You know, you run the table on this road trip, and I'd be very confident that we're a strong playoff team, and that would lead me to a certain direction for the trading deadline. If on the negative side the road trip doesn't go as well, I would probably have a far different answer and a far different approach to the trading deadline. But I've been saying that for the last 3 or 4 weeks, and we just we get a little bit of momentum with a couple of big wins, and then we have an outing like we had at home the other night that we really felt we could or should win the game, and we don't look ourselves at all. So we're on a day-to-day watch here. I mean, tonight is a game. If you look at the standings, there's points separating us. Obviously, if we win tonight, we're 2 points out of the playoffs. That would be tremendous, and that would be a great feeling. Vice versa, you lose, and that's just another negative. That means you got to put together a streak of 3 or 4 games to get back up to get into the playoff race. So it's a difficult time to give exact answers and to give exact direction. I know that's my job. We have I talk to the coaches on a daily basis about direction and what we need to do and what have you. And they seem to be very confident with the team. Obviously disappointed with the game the other night, but very confident that we can do better and we can be more consistent. We've had pro meetings and we're all ready with our scouts. And I've been calling a lot of teams to stay in regular contact as the trading deadline, both as, to be very honest, both as a buyer and as a seller, to find out what other teams might have available. And I'm very open with other teams as to what we might have available if we choose to be a seller. So you got to stand by, and next week when I talk to you, we'll have these four games, the three of the games done, and playing Vancouver that night, and we'll see how we feel at that time. But it's just a feeling that we could be doing a little bit better, and I think we're still holding on to that hope that we can find that consistency.
David Poile, Predators general manager, is here with us on Darren Donick and Chase. And David, one thing we've talked about for the past several years is just how close this team is. I mean, you've built a family, essentially, because you have a lot of these guys that were either drafted by the organization and have come up together through Milwaukee, or a player like Philip Forsberg that you traded for when he was quite young and a prospect. And so they've, in a sense, all grown up together. And I think that's a positive thing, and we've seen how positive that can be. But from your standpoint as a manager, how do you monitor that of, okay, maybe there are times where they get a little too close and it makes it hard to deal with tough situations similar to what they've been in this season?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, we wanted to keep the team together based on performance. I mean, the last 5 years have been really good in performance in terms of the Stanley Cup Finals and 100 points the last 2 years. A lot of good things have happened, and we have a lot of good players. Right now, our team is not as good a team. I think individually, we have the players that make us as good a team as we've ever had.
Uh-oh. We got zapped. That was a good one.
That was a good one. We got zapped.
Dang it.
All right, I was real excited about that question and his answer.
I know.
Very well thought out. But okay. We can try and get him back on.
David Poile brought to you by Gary Force Acura and Cool Springs Wines and Spirits. He's up in Winnipeg. Preds and Jets tonight at 7 o'clock. I'll have pregame for you starting at 6. Everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. As I think we've reconnected with David Poile. We were
David, I was so proud of my question,
too. We were listening
to
your words, every word, and then boom, zap.
Yeah, my phone just went dead. I guess it's it's a long way from Winnipeg to Nashville. So check my phone service, but I have you now. So what was I saying? Where'd you lose me?
You were talking about how positive it was of the success that you had over the last 5 years with the team being so close together and wanting to keep them together. And my question was simply just, how do you monitor that of sometimes guys can get too close and it makes it harder to address tough situations?
Yeah. Well, what I was saying at the end there is that on paper that we have a terrific team, good players. It's been proven by how we've played before. But, you know, this is such a team game. So individually, we are good. But as a team, we're not as good as we should be. We've had that before, so history shows me that we can get that back. So using your expression of the family, I mean, sometimes a family, has some breakdowns or what have you, but because of the family, that's what we have to do here. And more as a team and support each other more as a team and push guys more individuals. If somebody's not doing it, then somebody's got to pick up the ball and do a better job. And by them doing a better job, they'll bring somebody else along. So it's, again, it's something that we've seen before and we were able to have success with these guys. And, it starts again tonight for this road trip. I mean, it's the biggest game of the year, and I'll be saying that in the next game in Calgary and the next game in Edmonton. But that's where we are. And, I mean, again, as a player, you play an 82-game schedule. It's a little bit of a marathon versus a sprint. But here we are, in the last third of this season, and the games are huge. And I don't know about you guys, but this is what I would love to be playing in tonight's game, to see what I could do as an individual and what we could do as a team. So we're going to learn a lot about ourselves in this next little while.
Let's end on a positive note. I saw that Ryan Ellis was on the ice for morning skate. I know that John Hines said yesterday that he was going on the trip, probably wouldn't play, but could practice. This is obviously a huge step in his recovery and getting back in the lineup.
No, absolutely. Their players are just on the ice now. I'm in the concourse. I'm going to just peek my head in here, which would be a little bit noisier, to see if Ryan is out on the ice with our guys, or whether he's skating on his own. So we're all out here now. So it's a good thing. I mean, I don't think when there's any predictions exactly of when he's going to be able to come back, but the fact that he's traveling with us and he's feeling a better bodes well for us. And again, you talk about you asked me about the trade deadline. Well, the biggest addition that we can make to our team, and it would be obviously to get Ryan back. I think that's a huge missing piece in our team. I think I said maybe last week to you that there's certain players that you lose a position or what have you. Certain guy could be hurt or what have you. But I think between Roman and Ryan, that would be the worst guys to have out. So getting Ryan back hopefully soon, that would be terrific for us.
David, we appreciate the visit as always. Stay warm and bring back some points with you.
Okay, guys, we're going to do it.
All right, thanks. That is David Poile. His weekly with us every Tuesday at 11:15. He's brought to you by Gary Force Acura and Cool Springs Wines and Spirits. We will take a break, collect our breath.
I need a breath.
Take a deep breath. Man, it has been a lot going on the first hour and a half of the show. We'll kind of recap what we've gone through. Don't forget, coming up at noon, we're going to learn a little bit. We're going to say hello to a friend on the show that just got to experience winning the Super Bowl with the place that he works at, which is really cool. We're excited for him. Also, we'll head to Winnipeg at 1 o'clock. We'll continue the discussion on what's transpired this morning as well. You're listening to Darren Donica Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Well, we've covered a lot of ground in a little bit more than an hour and a half on this show. Started off talking about the mess that is Nashville SC, thanks to Mayor John Cooper. I don't know him. He hasn't been on the show. It's clear that he was against this. I'm not sure why. Politics is not really what our level of expertise is about. We're a sports talk show.
By choice.
Yep. Sports is what we do. Obviously, we're biased. I get it. But this is a good thing for the city. This city has changed in a lot of it. I get it. We got a new convention center, and that changed it a lot for the better. But also sports is a big, big part of what we've done. The growth of this city and where it is today and all this that's happening. And here we go again with this saga that is this Nashville SC Stadium. And I hope they can figure this out. And I hope that John Cooper, whether he is a sports fan or not, will do what's best for the city. And I think it's really hard to argue right now that sports things are not good for the city. Oh, by the way, as we covered the NASCAR awards banquet that just came to our city for the first time, we talked to anybody and everybody, some pretty important people in NASCAR, and there's no secret, including a lot of drivers, and there is no secret whatsoever that they are dying to get back to this market. And you know what? That is not a horrible thing at all. So if you can figure out how to renovate that track and get it up to speed, get a short track race here on the Cup side, and you add an MLS stadium, look, this thing will just get – we've already said it. Like, just stop complaining. Like, we've stopped. Let's not bellyache about where it is because it's not going away. It's not going to stop. Okay, none of us are going to be able to stop what's going on. So we might as well just embrace it and just keep growing with it. And that's a big part of it. So I hope, whether he likes sports or not, John Cooper can realize the importance of sports in this market and in Nashville and what it's done, what the Predators have done for this market, what the Titans have done for this market, what that new stadium for the Sounds has done for that area and this market.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very good point because it's changed so much. And, you know, with the affiliation that they have with the Rangers, you know, the Rangers came in and played last year.
I mean, Germantown was just like the fairgrounds. It was just, nothing going on.
And it's been built up. Some of my favorite places are
over there.
I was going to
say, now look at it.
I'm over in that area all the time.
John Cooper, that's because of sports.
Yeah.
That's why Germantown is what it is, because of sports. Because of a new baseball stadium, First Tennessee Park, which is not First Tennessee Park anymore.
First Horizon. Yep.
It's a beautiful little AAA ballpark. And they've experienced a lot of growth there. Their attendance has been fantastic, and the area boomed around that baseball field. And the same would happen to the fairgrounds area. And so I hope they can figure all this out. They've got an ownership group with deep, deep, deep pockets that seem to keep coming back to the city and saying, okay, fine. There's overruns. Okay, we owe you more. Fine. We'll pay more.
We'll take care of it. And you keep saying, I hope they can figure this out. Well, they can figure it out. They can. There's no question. It's do they want to? And I think it's interesting of the different angles of how you can look at this because, you know, we got a tweet. Nick Ferris listens to the show all the time, and he said the real sticking point is nobody in Nashville really wants soccer. I don't think that's true.
No, it's not true.
I don't think that's true at all.
Are we the biggest soccer fans in the world?
That's exactly where I was going. Are we the experts?
Nope. But that's just not true. It's just not. What are you basing that on?
I think if you go back to when the Predators first got here, because – you know, in Nashville, in the South, football, okay, yeah, everybody knows football. The NFL coming here, sure, there were people against it because they didn't want their taxes to go up. Okay, fine. But people are like, yeah, football, we understand the NFL. Hockey, you had a smaller audience. And you had people that were like me that didn't grow up watching it, didn't know anything about it, didn't understand it. And so, therefore, when it first started, I wasn't really interested. Well, then I go to a game. And I start watching the team as they get good and they make playoff runs and I meet some of the players and I learn more about it. Guess what? I'm a hockey fan. I get into it. And now you have a generation like your son that doesn't know this city without hockey, doesn't know this city without the Predators, and he's just grown into it. And so many kids have done that. I heard you say multiple times throughout the years of you got to let a generation, you know, cycle through.
Well, we've already done that. We're on the second generation now.
Right. So now we've gotten to that point. Soccer can do the same thing. Now, it's different because it's bigger in other countries than it is in this one, but it's growing in this one. And I think Tennessee and Nashville being a part of that growth is a very positive thing. So to say that there's not a lot of people that support soccer. Sure, there's probably people that don't care, but then there are a ton of people that do. And I think if you look at this in the big picture for the city, this is a good thing. The racetrack is a good thing. I'm a huge NASCAR fan. I've been on these airwaves for years saying, bring the Cup Series to Nashville. You know, we've done shows about it. We've done shows in Daytona. Daytona coming up in a couple of weeks. I would love to see it happen. I understand that not everybody's a NASCAR fan. Some people couldn't care less and won't go to the race. But it's good for the city. It brings in money. It brings in notoriety. The NASCAR banquet brought in money to the city. You have to look at it from that standpoint. And the mayor has to understand, if you're not a sports fan, great, don't care. Really don't care if you're a sports fan or not. You have to look at, if you're going to be my mayor and you're going to do what's best for the city, you have to look at any event that wants to come here, any business that wants to come here, and weigh the pros and cons. Will it be good for the city? It doesn't matter what it is.
We'll come back and wrap up the second hour. We'll talk to Pat Sperduto at noon. Also, Max Herz is going to pop in here. We'll talk more about the situation concerning Vanderbilt. We'll head to Winnipeg at 1 o'clock. We've got a loaded show as we continue to run through all this. But first, I want to talk to all the men out there. I've been telling you for years about my friends over at Cool Springs MD, and they know a lot of you have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. And Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, who is the board-certified physician over there, and his wife Daphne Lodge, who's the registered nurse, and their experienced staff want to give you, man, the treatments that are required to improve your quality of life. And as we all get older, I hope you want that, like I do. And their services have already helped a lot of you here in the Middle Tennessee area and surrounding areas with improving your immune systems, which is vitally important this time of year for sure. Energy levels, it's always important on that. Cognitive function and so much more. They're there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. If that's something you want and you'd like to achieve a healthy lifestyle, what are you waiting for? Pick up the phone, make that appointment by dialing this number. 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Or you can always go to their website, coolspringsmd.com. The other big story is Malcolm Turner has resigned as Vanderbilt's AD. He lasted all of a year. Candace Story Lee will take over as the interim AD and become the first female AD at Vanderbilt University. This is a big one. And I saw stuff like over the weekend and then the hints at the very beginning of the show, like something is brewing on Malcolm Turner. And I'm thinking, what is he about to unveil? Their new football stadium? What's going on?
Right.
No.
And he wasn't at the 93 basketball reunion, so which they the team were really was on.
They were recognized Saturday night around the Florida game. The 1993 team was recognized, and he was not there for that. The baseball banquet was at the Omni.
Night. Yep.
Was at the Omni. By the way, we're going to have Tim Corbett on the show tomorrow at 10:15, so be listening for that. Malcolm Turner was not present at that. So when I asked Joe Rexroad, when do you think he woke up and said, I think I'm out. I think I've had enough. Well, I think it was definitely sometime before Saturday afternoon, because the fact that he didn't attend as the AD, those two events should tell you everything you need to know.
Speaks volumes.
I don't believe that Jerry Stackhouse is long for this job. Obviously, they're a hot mess this year. Things have not gotten any better. I get it. They lost their best player in Neesmith. But, I mean, they're just muddling along. I don't even know if they're going to win a conference game. Maybe they'll win one. Maybe. Maybe they – I don't know.
How much is his heart in this now, though? I mean, because his guy brought him in. His guy's gone. The team is not very good. It's going to take a lot of work. I think he has aspirations of the NBA. So I'm with you. I could totally see at the end of the year he's just like, I'm
out.
I could
see him bouncing at the end for sure. So. I just don't see. I mean, and plus.
And what does this mean for Derek Mason?
Plus what we've been talking about. I mean, he's. You don't think him and Malcolm Turner were talking? They came basically as a package deal.
Right.
Who's kidding who? Okay. Malcolm Turner knew he was going to bring Jerry Stackhouse with him. And Bryce Drew, sure, unfortunately, just made it easy for him. He went 0-for in conference play. But you don't think he's, you know, one, you don't think they've been talking a lot? And two, you don't think he hasn't seen the same thing? Like, wow. I get it. Jerry Stackhouse has been Jerry Stackhouse. He's a big deal. Okay.
Yeah.
He played at North Carolina. He played in the NBA for a long time. And I can understand him going, barriers, hurdles, obstacles.
I got
Jerry
this.
Stackhouse. Hello. I understand that. Malcolm Turner, smart guy, gets it. You know, had success on the G League. He has to trust his abilities. He probably came in and was like, I got this. No big deal. What they have found out is, yeah, there's been a lot of people. Don't worry. A lot of people thought they could change Vanderbilt. And some have had some victories, some little victories. But overall, if you really want to make sweeping changes, nobody's been able to pull that off.
Yeah.
Where you've got to deal with major issue with the football stadium. You've got to deal with lots of renovations and things with Memorial Gym. Just a lot of, they need a lot of other bells and whistles. Oh, by the way, go around and look at other schools in the SEC, their facilities, where Jordan Rodgers has told us many times, like their facility where they house the football players. And they've done upgrades to the locker room. I get it. They've done upgrades to the weight room. But it's still not up to par with the other ones.
And
other
the game,
schools
day, the game
the
day
SEC.
Locker rooms are ridiculous.
Yeah.
In the stadium.
They are.
The media rooms. I mean, where I was there a few years ago when they
that
played Alabama.
That press room is a closet.
Yeah, and the one that the visiting coach goes in is even smaller. And had Nick Saban doing a post-game press conference with everybody packed like a sardine can. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Now, the question is for Candace Story Lee is she understands it. She played at Vanderbilt. She understands the lay of the land. She gets Nashville. She gets Vanderbilt. She gets the SEC. But what can she get done? What can she get accomplished?
And I'm curious.
I thought you brought up something earlier that was a really good point. Is she somebody that's still going to try to plow forward, right? Just
sure.
keep trying to move yeah. obstacles and hurdles? Or is she somebody that's just so happy to be in that spot? She's going to be a yes person and just be, as they say, air quotes, a company person, right?
Because there were times where David Williams was who started the whole stadium conversation. But there were times where, you know, David Williams was a Vanderbilt guy. He was just, there were some status quo things. And then Malcolm Turner, I think, tried to go to the extreme. And the reports are that he was spending a lot of money and that was a concern and all of that. So where does she fall into it? Where is she going to be? And only time will tell. I have heard from Vanderbilt Athletics. They're working on her media schedule and all of that stuff. So we will be hearing from her at some point.
I do think there's a real shot without knowing her, but I've talked to enough people
mm-hmm.
that do. I feel like there's a real shot. She will take a different
I think
approach.
So
and
I think
we,
she has to.
We keep our fingers crossed and hope that that is the case because Malcolm Turner was just hiding behind a curtain. That's all right. he was doing. I mean, he just would send out press releases, and we had one interaction with him, and that was basically it. It wasn't his deal. That's not how he operated. He really didn't want to be visible and out there and doing interviews and press conferences, you know, normal AD stuff, especially in the SEC. That's just not how he operated. He operated a lot behind closed doors. And in my opinion, working my entire adult life, someone that's running the show, working behind closed doors, doesn't work.
No.
It doesn't work. Can't run a company through email.
Nope. Some people try, but it usually doesn't work out that way. Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, tweeted this out. As a student athlete, Candace Lee showed her passion and commitment to Vanderbilt. I know the leadership skills she has developed will serve her in the Vanderbilt community well and look forward to working with Candace in this new role. Commissioner Greg Sankey already commenting on Vanderbilt's move today, which I think is cool. And, you know, the first female athletic director in the SEC, This is a big day for Vandy and for the SEC. And as we've been talking about, and Max is going to be in here, what does this mean for athletics moving forward? So I'm curious to answer a lot of those questions.
We will come back and start the third hour with Pat Sperduto, who was down in Miami taking in Super Bowl 54. He works for the Chiefs. Really cool moment. He had his family down there.
He's a Nashville legend.
He is a Nashville legend. Now he's a Super Bowl champ. And his entire family, they all live here in Nashville, and they got to take it in. And so it was a really, really cool experience. And this just in, he's a really important scout for them, has been a really important scout for them for a long time. He is a big part of them constructing the rosters that they have over the years to get them to this point. So we'll talk to Pat Sperduto to kick off the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next.